Russell Bowles, the outgoing Ambulance Commissioner.
Russell, thank you so much for being here to have a chat with me today. I wanted to start by taking you back to the start of your career, 40 years ago. Why did you decide to become an ambulance officer?
Oh, well, it just basically happened at the time. You know, if you go back in history 40 years ago, universities weren't always an option to everyone, and this cadetship came up. So I applied and was lucky enough to get it.
And what was the training then for an ambulance officer?
Well, I was one of the first of the cadets in Rockhampton, and they actually had a structured 3-year training program that was basically vocationally based, with a lot of work in the Rockhampton Base Hospital, and so it was a good program for its day, but it was a very different world, you know, back then.
Can you remember the first time you went out in an ambulance to an emergency?
Well, yes, and as I say, they were different days, because as a cadet, you were sometimes the last person at the station with the training officer. So you used to actually get to go out a lot, and often when there was no other resources around, and you could be 150 kilometres up the highway, or you could be, you know, around town. But I still do remember the first job I did go out on, and it was a cardiac arrest in the CBD of Rockhampton.
Talk us through your career from then. So you started in Rocky. What happened from there?
Well, I finished the cadetship in late 83 and went down to Ipswich. You've got to understand, the ambulance service in those days was 96 individual services, so there wasn't one statewide ambulance service. So I left Rockhampton QATB and I went down to Ipswich, and was there for about 4.5 years between the Ipswich Centre and Redbank substation. The ambulance service joined up in 1992, so they took the 96 ambulance services and turned it into one. My first job after 1991 was to be appointed to a communication centre supervisor in Bundaberg, there for about 4.5 years. It was an exciting time, because it was a time where we were amalgamating communications, you know, like the back then the superintendent's wife would answer the phone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for anything that come in if he was out. And I do say he, because there were no female superintendents in those days. So one of the first things we did as a system was to start to put our communications into 7 communication rooms throughout the state, and Bundaberg was one of them. So that was my first role. I then went on to be the area director in Bundaberg, and then area director on the Sunshine Coast, then went back up to Rockhampton as the assistant commissioner. So I used to run the Rocky, Mackay, Emerald, Gladstone part of the ambulance service. They were good times too. You know, the kids were just pre-teens, and their grandparents were there. So it was a really good time to actually return to Rockhampton, and it was a good platform. I then later got transferred to Brisbane as assistant commissioner in Brisbane, and then deputy commissioner, and then in June 2011 I was appointed commissioner.
So just want to take you back to your days as an ambulance officer out on the road. What did you like about that?
Oh, well, you like the people, and you do like your patients. You actually feel like it's a job where you do make a difference, mm-hmm. in someone's life. And you know, you can see some very tragic things, but you can also see some very beautiful things. And as I say, you can impact people's lives very, very positively. And you know, just the way in which the community treat the paramedic, I suppose, when they show up at their house because they're in a time of need, it's quite a rewarding job. Yeah. One I really loved, I must admit, being on road as an ambulance officer.
Have you ever delivered any babies on the side of the road?
Well, in a long time on road, I got there after. they're all delivered, and yet I know paramedics that have just been in the job for 3 years and have delivered 3 babies, so it's sort of luck of the draw, to be honest.
Yeah. You mentioned before about the tragic events that you've seen and responded to, and as commissioner, you've led the QAS response to many tragic events across the state. How do you recover from such tragic events and look after your own mental health?
Yeah, and that's a challenge, because a lot of what you do is making sure that there's a system-wide response that actually happens, first of all in the way in which we respond to the tragedy, But then it's how we clean up or how we mop up after that's ever so important. And the organisation, it has one of the best priority. Well, it's called Priority One. It's an employee assistance scheme. It was commenced in 1991 and gone from a really well-meaning system that looked after people to a state-of-the-art employee assistance scheme that's based on, you know, science and evidence. So all of our responses are systemised, but so is the way in which we look after our people after a tragic event. And I've made sure that we've invested very, very heavily in our Priority One services, because everyone from the commissioner, you know, through to the patient transport officer at some point in their careers needs help. And that help's got to be appropriate, and it's got to be appropriate to the type of, you know, business that you run. But sometimes you do get caught up in just making sure that the system's fed and that everything's happening as the tragedy goes on. And it is important that you just take stock, make sure you're well yourself. One thing I have learned, you can't have longevity without looking after yourself, and you do have to be able to at times just separate the workout from the home and get very disciplined at that. And I think that's one of the things that I've been actually quite successfully able to do throughout my career, is to recognise that I've probably got the best job no matter what I was doing in the world. But at the same time, I did always see it as, this is how I provide for my family.
Was that program something that you brought in during your time?
No, it was started by a man by the name of Paul Scully, a psychologist. He was a paramedic on road, saw a need once the system come together, so the 96 joined up. He started this off as a very small service just provided by him. Then it just grew and grew and grew, and now we have a network of about 100 contracted psychologists, and we employ 13 of our own, and we have them regionally based now, so just to make sure that the health and well-being of our people is paramount to us as a system. QAS, it is a people-driven system, and so you've got to have the people healthy to be able to deliver high-level patient care.
And Russell, so you became commissioner in 2011, and in fact you were the first Queensland paramedic to become commissioner. What did you hope to achieve in your time in the top job?
2007, we had an audit into the ambulance service, and there was about 107 recommendations that come out of that. And it did give us a roadmap, and not long after the review came out, I was appointed by the then Commissioner, David Melville, to the role of Deputy Commissioner. And you could always just see that the role of ambulance probably is not one that sits comfortably in emergency services and sits in the health service. So I suppose over a journey, it's been this transition for me to take us from being an emergency service to being an emergency health service. That's had its challenges along the way, but, you know, now it's the law as the 15th registered health profession nationally. So the QAS, yeah, we've been on that journey, and, yeah, I think we've actually, like in a lot of cases, led the country in just how ambulance services should be positioned within health services. A lot of other systems, you know, they fall under the Ministry for Health, but they're just not integrated like we are as a system into the broader health network, because the community, they believe that when they dial 000, they're entering the health system, not when they hit the sliding doors of the emergency department or wherever it may be.
What would be your highlights from the decade in the job?
My highlights would be just to see what a professional system it is now. You know, the people that we employ now, the majority of which all come out of the university system, and just to see that, you know, when I started, used to get into trouble for carrying a stethoscope. So to today, you know, where there's some very invasive, and, you know, we've got intensive care, we've got our high acuity units, we've got our advanced care paramedics on all ambulances. So I suppose just to be a part of that growth. You know, as I say, we've only been one ambulance service for 30 years, and 10 years of that I've been in charge, and I think they've been a really fruitful 10 years, you know, where we've seen a lot of progression, but not only clinical progression, and that's what people see and that's what the patient sees each and every day, but also the use of ICT to manage, to run operations, and just how I believe that we've been able to systemise it into a system. And I always say one of our strategic advantages as an organisation, we might have 300 locations or just a little over 300 locations that we deliver service from, but it's the 8 communications rooms, you know, networks, and you know, they're all, you know, hooked up. That just gives us that advantage, because we're just able to keep the system as one system. So it might be very decentralised, but it has to come together to deliver services as one.
What challenges has QAS dealt with during the pandemic?
There's lots of challenges, and I think the whole health system's been challenged. You look at the original information that was provided, you know, we're going to have 1 million people in Queensland contacted, 200,000 of them were going to be unwell, and 20,000 of them were going to be hospitalised. Or anyway, some, you know, mega numbers like that. And whilst we're lucky in Queensland, or not lucky, you know, you make your own luck, as they say, there has been a lot of challenges because, and I think on the whole health system, because that 1 million patients, it still always sits there. You're like, you know, it doesn't go away, the threat of it. And you could see, you know, you have some states that were going along swimmingly, and it can change, and that can happen here. So you've always got that threat that lingers, and it does take resources. It takes resources out of the whole system, whether you're doing fever clinics or whatever whatever you're doing, and that does put pressure on, you know, the entire system, and then that plays out in ways like ambulances are ramped for longer or. But in the main, I'm really proud of the way QAS has responded to COVID. I think the paramedics and all other frontline staff have just been very, very mature in the way in which they've approached this. And I think QAS has probably done over 1,000 COVID positive transfers, or close to that number anyway. And not to have a staff member contract this disease, I think that's just shows, you know, their professionalism. But I think the other thing is, you go into some of these, you know, like emotion can take over at times, and one of the things I often like to say, you know, when everyone else is getting emotional, leaders in the health system need to become calm, and I think the entire health system's been great like that.
How do you remain calm, Russell, in such high stress situations? What's your secret to that?
Well, you have to, you know, you just can't be emotional, and I, you know, I always you know, say to people, and especially managers and executives, and you've got to remind everyone all the time, when things get emotional, always look at the evidence, always look at the data, and always look at the facts, and it will normally take the emotion out of it. Because health systems, you know, whether it's the ambulance service or not, they can be very emotive type systems, and our people, they look to us for guidance, and if the executives and the leadership can seem to be calm, our people will be calm, and that will flow right through the entire system.
Russell, just on COVID, what lessons has the QAS and yourself learnt from the experiences of COVID?
Well, the lessons we've learnt is, you know, along had come a disaster, or along had come a cyclone, or along would come something, and you'd stand up an emergency operation centre. One of the lessons that we've taken out of this, and one of the legacies that I'm sure that will continue, is rather than having those processes or, you know, emergency centres, you know, stand up, stand down, stand up, stand down, I think what it's taught us is that we can take a whole lot of things that we have to do each and every day and combine them into the one, you know, emergency operation centre, and then not have it stand down, stand up, stand down, and just have it up, running. And it'll have different levels of resourcing depending on what's going on at the time. And I think that's a big learning for us. Like, let's just keep it stood up. Let's resource it in an appropriate way. And the way, it's just not about, you know, throwing, you know, hundreds of extra resources in. It is about looking at the functions that are already taking place that are resourced, and how do we consolidate into that room. And the work that, you know, the deputy commissioners and Craig and Dee have done in that space has been actually quite amazing. Yeah, I'll tell you the other lesson you actually learn is that right through the system, you've got good people that are just prepared and invested, and they just make it happen. And, you know, everyone from the deputy commissioners right through the whole system to our frontline responders, they've just made this work. And we've even had to do things that we wouldn't traditionally do, you know, like stand up fever clinics at, you know, a few hours' notice, and just, you know, just things like that. But they keep, our staff seem to enjoy it. I think it, you know, keeps things interesting.
Have you turned your phone on silent at night since you've since you've finished up in the top job?
Yeah, not only at night. Yeah, I'm always, you know, available, because, you know, you've got kids and you never know if they're going to ring or they're not going to ring. It's been a nice change, to be quite honest.
You know, I can imagine how many calls in the middle of the night you've had as commissioner.
Yeah, and it starts, you know, sometimes can start very early in the morning and, you know, just continue all day until you're ready to go to bed of a night time. So, no, it's been good not having to be on the phone all the time, to be quite honest.
I can imagine. Russell, it's been fascinating talking with you, and thank you for your 40 years of service to the QAS, and all the best with what comes next for Russell Bowles.
Thanks very much, Rebecca.